This is Patrick Gleason, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay. Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is Gamers Haven, episode 102. Still in triple digits. We haven't decided to backtrack and start counting backwards, I think. So
yeah. I think we should jump to 500.
Jump to 500 or just 5?
Yeah. Just go all the way back to 5.
I've been listening to the old episodes. I'm up to episode, I think, 10. I just finished episode 10. We're in the middle of our genres talk.
We could just jump to 5,000.
5,000.
Might as well.
I mean, no one else has made it to 5,000, for crying out loud, so.
Don't say that, because then people will start doing the, it's over 9,000 videos to for us.
Yeah, there is that. Things are trickling out on the website. The feeds are getting sort of tooled with here and there. You can now subscribe to the main Gamers Haven actual play feed is back up and running and contains pretty much everything at this point. So, you'll be able to, you can go there and get lots of good stuff. Today on the show, we're pointed at an article called 11 Ways to Be a Better Role Player that we're going to discuss here in a bit. But first off, we've got, some catching up to do, a few general sort of tidbits. It is, of course, August 16th, 2013, which means we are, today is day two of Gen Con. And I don't know about you guys, I've seen a few things, sort of news bits, you know, filter out of Gen Con, but not a whole heck of a lot.
Nothing
so far.
Big, really,
Haven't seen anything really come out of it yet. Unfortunately, the person I know who's there, I can't get a hold of him, so I can't really find out what's mm-hmm. going on or what he's heard. And I don't really have like a gaming news site that I frequent regularly.
Yeah.
So I don't really have the ability to keep my ear to the ground really low. I mean, usually if someone has something they think that looks important to me, they send me a link.
Tracy
is there. Yes, he is. I am on the Paizo Publishing press list, and we did get their press release, their announcement. Paizo with Pathfinder have inked a licensing deal with Big Finish Audio Productions, the guys who do those the Doctor Who audio
yeah,
productions.
Yeah, the really excellent Doctor Who shows.
Tons of other stuff. But they're going to create Pathfinder Legends full cast audio adventures.
Huh.
Which are going to starting with digital downloads, range of single CD releases priced at $15.99. And digital downloads starting at $12.99. That's U.S. The first 6-episode Pathfinder Legends series will be a new full-cast audiobook drama based on the highly popular Rise of the Rune Lords storyline, with Chapter 1, Burt Offerings, expect release in January 2014. This is the only big news I was able to catch coming out of Gen Con. I mean, there are a few other things, but a lot of people I'm noticing are pulling out these announcements as basically saying, "Oh, this is happening," but they say it before they go.
Right. That is kind of neat, though, that they're doing audios.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I expected from them at the very least. The other sort of announcement just before going to Gen Con, Fantasy Flight. Announced that they are coming out with the Star Wars Age of Rebellion role-playing game, and that the beta is going to be coming out. I'm not sure if they've actually said exactly when it's coming out anytime, as far as, you know, when's it coming, that sort of thing, so...
Is it going to use their funky dice, I'm assuming?
Probably. And it starts off with it's going to be a beta release, so I mean, they're going to do some open play testing, that sort of thing. So,
so okay. Paizo's got it now.
No, this is Fantasy Flight. Still Fantasy Flight, yeah. And you got to play the Edge of the Empire?
No.
It was Noah.
Noah.
Obviously, Noah isn't here with us today. He's working like a dog, like he usually does. But he's hopefully made some changes
attack
there. And of course, my phone decides to go off. Speak of the devil, Noah just texted. He's actually on his way home. He'll be here in about 20 or 30 minutes. So Noah will be joining us shortly. We're going to be talking about all sorts of good stuff. So that little laser blast or blast from He-Man's sword is what was Noah. So Noah is actually He-Man.
And with some editing, you won't even know the difference. He'll just be, he's here.
Okay.
He'll be great.
We have been joined by our fourth illustrious member. He has skipped out on work. He is now here. He is now in real life, and he is Noah.
Booyah.
Yes. And you'll notice a bit of an audio change, and that's because our other mixer sort of decided to crap out on us. And so we are now on the unidirectional mic, so you're going to hear various extra noises in here, like us moving our chairs. This is a very sensitive orchestra microphone. So,
and echoes.
It'll sound okay. Eventually we'll get this soundproofing sorted out.
Yeah, we need to...
I've got all the stuff in the car!
Yeah, we don't have time to do it right now. Yeah. So,
all we need to do is we just need to identify what the short is in the main board and fix it.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Anyway, where were we?
We were here. We were sitting in this room talking about stuff. Now, we...
I wanted to talk about the quick D&D Next.
Yes, D&D Next. Well, we were talking a bit about how today's the second day of Gen Con, and so a few things popped out, and we mentioned the Pathfinder, Paizo, announced a licensing deal with Big Finish Audio. The people who do the Doctor Who audio dramas, amongst other things, they're going to be producing
Pathfinder
audio.
Cool!
The first six-part series is based on the Rise of the Rune Lords.
That's cool. Cool.
So
I like that a lot.
Start coming out in January, so
that's
look
awesome.
Forward to that. And, the audios, each audio episode's like $9 or something like that, I can't remember, or $12. Anyway.
But Big Finish Productions puts an incredible...
Oh, yeah. Their Doctor Who stuff is awesome.
Yeah, it's polished to the gills.
And right before going to Gen Con, Fantasy Flight Games announced they're putting out the beta of their Rebellion Era RPG. The next Star Wars.
When I was playing with Sterling...
And I was going to ask you, you got to play Edge of the Empire.
Edge of the Empire? Did I talk about this last...
I think you talked about it a little bit. I never listened to it, so that's all
right. I was very impressed with Edge of the Empire. The rule set is far less wonky than I was expecting out of a Fantasy Flight RPG.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun to play. It played very easily with those dice, and you know, even if you can use regular D12s or
well, yeah, they have a conversion chart that makes it perfectly easy to
use
normal dice, which is
and,
good.
But what Sterling told me is really that Edge of the Empire is really their kind of bounty hunters and smugglers session. Then they're going to be coming out with like kind of like a nobles and pilots kind of thing, if you want to relate it to like the Saga edition.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to do like a Jedi Sith section. So they're going to be splitting into really three sections.
Well, and I hope it's in that order. So that means they're taking their time on developing the Jedi and the Force
because they
really need to.
And there are some basic Force use stuff in Edge of the Empire. There are rules for kind of basic stuff for everybody in Edge of the Empire. But the next stuff is going to be coming out progressively and the only downside I see is financially. I mean, each of these books is going to be a full size.
$40,
I believe they're actually
$50 or $60. They're expensive books.
Yeah. But the game was a lot of fun, so they announced the beta for that, so that's awesome. That's going to be fun. Anything else that got announced?
Well, this is something that popped up from Gen Con. Supposedly, Mike Merle stated this, survey report
meaning the surveys coming in from the playtests for D&D Next, mm-hmm. Report increasing satisfaction with rules. Final public playtest in mid-September. Work on game not done, but enough public feedback. So this triggered a lot of fervor throughout the forum. Basically...
So, all right, wait. So they said, okay, the last playtest is coming out in September.
Because of satisfaction with the rules.
Right.
So people... Because the people on the forum, a lot of times, believe they are the only voice, you notice.
And the ones on the forum... You've looked at the forums more than any of us.
Yes.
And the ones on the forums are crazy.
A lot of them are crazy. I find it very entertaining.
What was it they were going on and on? Was it hit points?
Hit points a lot. All sorts of stuff. And the thing is, you've got individuals who do spout stuff that makes sense. Unfortunately,
right.
they get
lost amidst the crazy.
They get, yeah. But this came out, and it brings up very interesting things. Like, what does this mean? Because...
Well, are they going to go to a closed playtest?
Are they going to close playtest?
Are they going to say, okay, we've got the bare bones, we're going to flesh it out, and next Gen Con, D&D Next comes out.
Something else that was final playtest packet will be released in September. Some indications that possibly it could get to the printer by February, but see, nothing has actually been reported that there's an official line on when things will be done.
And now, don't they have some printed up copies of the playtest rules at Gen Con?
Kind of.
Right.
They have...
Sort of like what Paizo did with their alpha?
Yes, they have a book, Dragon Spear something or other. Okay. It's a really nice looking book that you can get, and it has some of the playtest rules in it. I was looking at one of the pictures that somebody took. One of the pieces of art was upside down. It's kind of funny, you know, things like that. But, you know, whatever. So these rules are not set in stone. They're still issues. But the forums, I mean, there are people that are just like, the rules are not even done. Now we're talking about core rules. We don't know if the playtest is actually going to end on core rules only.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, because they were talking about doing three different rule sets.
Right. And core. And like, if that's their last playtest packet, does that end the NDA?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Does that just mean they're going to stop at the core?
And then... I only played in that one... Months upon months.
And that was a different packet.
Yeah.
Things have changed.
And it's way changed since then.
And so, they've been talking about, like, different... And this is stuff you can just look at the forum, so it's fine. Like, different, like, a core and, like, a middle one, I don't even know the different names. And then possibly, like, an advanced version. So, are they going to say, well, you can continue playtesting modules? Nobody knows. In September, though, this will be the last public playtest. But we don't know what that means.
And that's next month.
That's next month.
Yeah.
And this next one that comes out is the math fix.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been any math fixes. All of it was... And this is what some of the math people really got down on, is the math was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for some of us, we didn't care that much. We were just like, whatever, fine. You roll dice, you add numbers, fine, it works. But weird stuff happened. Like, monsters die easily, monsters don't die easily, PCs die easily, PCs don't die easily, you know, whatever. But no one has tested any modules.
Mm-hmm.
No one has tested anything else. So, in some ways, this has been playtested a lot more than 40.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's good. But this other stuff hasn't been playtested. So what are they going to do? Are they going to say, okay, so for the next books, we're going to playtest this? Because that would be great. They've actually kind of created a really good format that would make people, even with the people that are like crazy and just like, you know, blah, 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 you know, if they would continue this playtesting format, they could, I think, make a lot of people happy. Because they've created a, at least with the core rules, kind of a middle ground game. Now, There hasn't been a release date that I could see.
I was always under the impression that it was supposed to, they were supposed to debut something this year, and then it was supposed to release next year at Gen Con.
But I think they
never actually committed to anything. Yeah. They said, you know, if all goes well, we'll have something out by Gen Con 2013. But
they didn't.
But obviously they
because that wasn't that didn't work. Now, Gen Con 2014, that's a long ways away, and I mean, do we want to wait that long?
Well, when did... Okay, you continue talking.
I mean, that... Think about how long... What? Think about how long that is. Mm-hmm. That's stupid long ways away.
Well, I mean, what's... Have they been releasing any 4th Ed stuff at this point?
No, 4E is... No, they haven't released any 4E.
So what...
Magic the Gathering basically
is what
makes all their
watching,
money.
Is what keeping watching.
Plus, they have other stuff. I mean, they release other books, like... Other stuff. But like gaming
that.
Books? No.
So they're just
but they don't seem to care.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting.
Here's the thing. Dungeons & Dragons 4th Ed came out in 2008.
Right.
It's 5 years ago.
Right.
3rd Ed came out in 2000, so I mean you had an 8 year gap there and now.
But technically you had
3. It's also the 40th anniversary
right.
next year.
Revised came out in 2003.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little interesting.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at it at a time frame wise, why wouldn't they?
On average, you're looking
at
about every 5 years.
Well, why wouldn't they wait till next year? If next year's the big 40th anniversary, why not do this is the new 5th edition?
Yeah,
but also if they could get it out by Christmas, that would also be a great time. But if they can't, it's too early. It's way too early. Now, the one thing they said early on in the playtest, though, is they want the new D&D game to be like Monopoly.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a Hasbro thing.
Yeah, meaning you don't buy a new edition every year.
When they first were talking about 4th edition, and I mean, we're going way back, we said this, is Hasbro has always basically looked at D&D and been like, why doesn't this sell like Monopoly?
Mike Merles even said, we would like to be Monopoly in the sense that when you go buy another copy, you aren't changing editions. You are picking it up because your box is old.
Well, they can't, I don't know that that's a good look to take because, I mean, when it's not until my books really, really, like, are falling apart. Because I cherish that book. That is the book I bought, that I have played with,
that I have
put all these characters through. So it's not... I don't know.
But it is an interesting thing.
When was the last time you had a D&D edition that you were like that with? I mean, for me, it was 3.5.
Yeah.
I mean, 4th Ed was fine,
That's the other thing they talked about. Would 4th Ed be better if they would have done this playtest? Very possibly. Because you have lots of people.
You have a lot of people that were just like me that were like, I don't like this. This is too much like playing MMO.
But if they had people talking about it so they could come to a middle ground...
I mean, I think 4th Ed did, in a way, what it needed to do. It was the gap they needed for a new generation, for a different attention span to go, oh my god, this is awesome. And when I was running games in New Jersey, I ran an open entry D&D game at my local store.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I will take up to 8 players any given session. People can rotate through. I have a mechanic for this. That's perfectly fine. And I had... He was.
D&D 4th really
12.
Lent itself
yeah,
well
was
to organized
12,
play.
He was 12 years old.
Sure.
He was 12 years old, and it lent itself well
to new players. Yeah. And we said it when 4th Ed came out. They were tapping into that World of Warcraft market.
Yeah, they wanted some
of
those 12
of
million sales.
Exactly. I mean, it's like if we can get 1% of that.
And depending
that's
on who you talk to, it either worked well or it didn't. And that argument is just too out there.
That argument is done and done and dusted.
Whether you liked it or not.
They really put nails into that, pretty much they were trying to be World of Warcraft when they put out the strat the player's strategy guide.
Well, yeah.
I looked at that was like,
At least...
Damn you guys.
At least they created...
I defended you.
Yes, against me, who said, this is just EverQuest on a table.
But
it's just roll,
that
roll,
all aside,
mm-hmm.
one thing that has been brought up is maybe a playtest
mm-hmm.
would have made things different.
Well,
that's, you know, hindsight's
20/20.
It is. But they are doing a playtest
well,
this time.
And I'll even say with 4th edition, when they put out the Essentials books, that was
oh,
a,
God.
That was a leap.
I love Essentials.
I mean, we said
some people
they should have started with Essentials.
I actually
books.
Never picked up the Essentials books.
They should have started with them.
It made a cleric that could actually heal without being able to hit stuff. You could actually just cast a healing spell.
But,
God forbid.
But Essentials was
a nice... And
they would
have learned that in the playtest. Essentially what it is, they put it out.
Yeah.
And
then they went through a couple years of basically of playtesting of the actual game and people going... I like playing my cleric how it used to be.
Right. But a lot of people hate Essentials.
We thought you'd want to hit something. No, that's why I play
cleric.
Right.
I don't like
to
hit things.
Oh. And so they put out Essentials, and they messed with all that and fixed it and made it much more friendlier to people who played 3rd Ed and 3.5.
Right.
Yeah, but I still have problems with the whole... It's like, I have 35 hit points, and I still go down in one round of combat from one attack. What's the point in giving me 35 hit points, giving me this...
Yeah.
This huge inflated number, if essentially you're going to have the same effect of having the 10 hit points you had
mm-hmm.
in the previous edition. There was no reason to super inflate
oh, yeah.
the number.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
But I'm just curious what they're going to do after this, because they have this pool of people, they argue back and forth, yes, but they have this pool of people. And we're not talking about just on the forums.
Well, they argue
we
in real life. They will argue
about
everywhere.
People everywhere. And we're not talking about just them giving out their feedback on the forums. No, the surveys. Some people don't even talk on the forums. They don't care. I don't put my feedback on the forums.
No, why would
I put
you?
It in the surveys. And there's tons of people that are doing
yeah.
surveys.
Well,
so I'm curious.
As we have learned, I mean, that's a certain type of person that really likes and goes delves
right.
into those forums. And you know, I mean...
Those people kind of scare me sometimes.
My friend Aaron just deleted his Facebook account because he got tired of arguing with everybody. And that's what
yeah.
that's
Did
what that
really?
Turns into. Yeah, he got tired of arguing with people because he posted up saying something about some movie and people basically jumped on him going, you're an idiot. And it's like, you know what? Screw you. I do this for fun. I'm not going to argue with you.
The only thing I argued with him about is this thing of telling people that they needed to grow up and stop being childish. About the DRM policies with Xbox One, I'm like, no.
What you get with the Dean, especially like Wizards forums, the
right.
D&D stuff. I mean, is you get the extremes on there.
Oh, yeah.
You get the people who are highly opinionated. They go on there because they have their opinion and they know
right.
they're right.
And no, you're also talking about the people that like to be able to post whatever they want online because there's no fear of any sort of reprisal because they're anonymous.
But the nice thing is, if you dig through that, you find gems.
You have someone in there going, guys, what about
right.
this? And but they get steamrolled
so
over, and
that's
the problem.
That's why I like going to it, because
I'm sure that they're listening to the surveys a lot more than those forums.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I think they're going down this middle ground. But I'm curious, after September, are they just going to dump the whole playtest, or if they're going to say, look, we have this playtest group, why don't we test these other things that are related to it? Now we have the core rules, we're going to fix them. We're
right.
going to add these things. We're going to release them. Because they talked about this legacy system. High-level play is not even done. High-level play is dumb right now. Really
right.
dumb. It's open. It's dead levels everywhere. They could playtest that. They could just focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we have a legacy system. And then never did anything about it. So playtest it. Just say, we got the core system down. Great.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to release this in core books. Great. Hey, tidbits. Tidbits. But we don't know. We just know that September,
it's
last public playtest. We don't know what that means. Other than that's the math release.
Yeah,
so
it's all you know is that the playtest is done.
So
well, part of it. Who knows? We'll
see.
But it's interesting. It's funny. So far, it's kind of fun. So. Also, I hope it gets released earlier than Gen Con 2014, because that's a long time to wait.
Yeah, it's another year.
I know. That's also dumb.
But, well, they announced 4th Ed a year out.
They
announced 4E at Gen Con 2007 and said, we're putting this out next Gen Con.
Right.
I remember that. I had that press release.
So unless they
announce
it...
Yeah, that was like the last big year that we went.
Now, unless they announce it at the end of Gen Con...
Who knows? You know, I mean, I think I've got some additional. Tomorrow's Saturday. I mean, tomorrow's the busy day at Gen Con, so we'll see what sort of trickles out. I'm kind of annoyed a bit with news at Gen Con type of thing, and we're guilty of this too. I mean, there is no central aggregation of tabletop gaming news out there. And I do my best to sort of get on the press lists of everyone, and I need to find an easier way of getting that basically out on the Gamer's Haven feed. But there isn't a great place to go to, say, like, you know, if you want movie news, you can go to comingsoon.net or something like that, and you get a great thing. If you want...
Board Games has...
IGN is, you know, a good place to go for video game news, but tabletop stuff doesn't have anything. If they do, they're kind of spread out, sporadic, and not very reliable.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact Gen Con gives away tons of press passes, and a lot of people go in there and they don't put the information out there in easily accessible ways.
Right.
And that's frustrating. Because, I mean, I was scouring around for a while today looking for stuff that's like, oh, what's news has come out of Gen Con? And I know some of it's, you know, well, there is no news coming out of Gen Con.
Yep.
A lot of it's just like, I interviewed this guy on the floor type of thing, and I would like to see Gen Con go more the way of Comic-Con, you know, of having set press release. I mean, it's a place where they make these announcements.
Right.
But
like, random piece of news. They talked about the guy who won who did the investigation at Baldur's Gate, solved the mystery, and won the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't know who this guy is. Sword looked awesome.
That's fine.
I want to win the sword.
I don't care.
It's something.
And this goes to Wizards of the Coast. Their D&D website is a piece of crap.
Well, that's true. It is.
It doesn't have any news announcements on it. It's hard to navigate.
It's hard to navigate. You've got to find the stuff.
This, of course, we should know about hard to navigate websites. I'm telling you, we're experts.
Yeah.
So
I feel completely justified in telling Wizards of the Coast that your website sucks.
It is very hard. They've gotten better, but it's still hard.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, guys, come on. Man. There's some little tidbits and trickling stuff out here and there, but I mean, I haven't noticed any groundbreaking thing. And I remember when Gen Con used to be, I mean, it's the place where the big thing debuted. I guess Numenera's going to be there.
Yeah.
Numenera looks cool, but meh.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I've reached sort of a point in my gaming life where it's like, I'm much less enthusiastic about new releases anymore because I'm like, yeah, Deadlands Noir is great. It's cool. I will play that. I will run that at some point, I'm certain.
Oh, yeah.
So I will buy that.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't care if White Wolf is putting out another version of, you know, Werewolf of the Apocalypse or saying
Werewolf the Forsaken.
All over. No, they're putting out 20th anniversaries of editions of the original games.
Yeah.
We still have the original books. Why would we buy the original
releases?
Well,
but, you know, it's like, I'm at that point in my gaming life where I, you know, as some small company X puts out this relatively interesting looking game, it's like the thing I'm going to talk about today is Day After Ragnarok. It's like, yeah, that's interesting. The likelihood of me running or playing in that is very slim.
It's very,
so
it's
why
very
am I
difficult.
Going, why would I spend 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks on that?
Yeah. You get stuck in your ways and you're like, this is what I'm going to run.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be something. I will say, there are some new gaming announcements that came down my line that I'm kind of excited for. One of which is, I don't know if you saw this, Sentinel Tactics. They're doing a Sentinels of the Multiverse miniatures game.
Very nice. I did not hear that.
Which, they're doing a Sentinels of the Multiverse board game miniatures thing.
Was that why Chris was talking to the guy that did our miniature?
It entirely possible.
Because he said he wanted to talk to him about something at the con.
It came down my Kickstarter feed the other day. Let me log in and give you guys the full lowdown on that if you guys want to keep
talking. We'll get here into Kickstarter in a minute. I'm getting sick and tired of Kickstarter, quite frankly. A couple gaming sites I found, 98% of the stuff is, oh, this is launched on Kickstarter. This is launched on Kickstarter. I'm like, seriously, guys? Come on. And I still have a bug up my butt about Chaosium doing 7th edition.
Well, that's absolutely true.
What happened with that?
Chaosium...
They did a Kickstarter for Call of Cthulhu 7th edition.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, seriously, guys? Seriously. You have to go through Kickstarter? Really? You can't do the pre-orders off your website and sell umpteen bajillion copies of it already? It's freaking Call of Cthulhu.
That's true.
And I just look at it as it's a waste of their resources, it's a waste of Kickstarter, a waste of what Kickstarter was started to do.
Do you know why they did it, though? It was specifically the reason why they kickstarted it rather than doing pre-orders is they were trying to get more visibility for the product to get more people who didn't play it to support it. And I don't think it worked.
No.
Because people don't care. If it's not something that is like, oh, hey, I love H.P. Lovecraft's Mythos stories.
And I'm a subscriber to that.
Role-playing game.
I'm a subscriber to that idea of if I've got $20 in my pocket, I go on Kickstarter and say, I want to support a project. Oh, Call of Cthulhu, $20.
Right.
Instead of going, oh, hey, what's this interesting project over here? I want to look around and dig a little bit. Oh, hey, I'll put $20 on this guy's plate who wouldn't get it otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Chaosium could get the money to print Call of Cthulhu 7th edition.
That I don't know. I can't 100% guarantee that. They are
BS.
They are razor thin, man.
No. They could go. They could find investors that would do it.
Where did I see this?
They could base it entirely on pre-orders off of the website. It doesn't matter. They didn't need to use Kickstarter.
So, this totally random, and I don't know if it's me.
Mm-hmm.
Or a clone of me.
Okay.
But maybe I did this. I don't remember. But the new like Darkness Rising, the
Gamers.
Gamers. The
gamers
new gamers.
3?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nick was telling me that I backed it. Because my name is in the credits. If you backed it, your name is in credits. I don't remember backing it. So
you know you can check all your backed stuff on...
There's either I backed it and I don't remember.
Or someone backed it in your
Or no. There's another Jeremy Putnam out there that must die.
Kill him and take his
power. I must take his power.
Yeah.
Because I...
There could be only one!
Because he brought that up and I was like, I don't remember backing that. Because he's like, yeah, you need to watch that. Your name is in the credits. I'm like... What are you talking about?
Are they actually done with it? Is it done now?
I don't know. There was like some... He sent some video. Maybe like a test video. I have no idea.
It might just been a credit roll for it.
A credit roll? Maybe.
Whatever.
But he said my name was it. I was like, I backed this? When did I back this? How much did I back? Is there money missing from my wallet?
Yeah.
They snuck into your house like a ninja in the night.
And I think Kickstarter is a great platform for things like that. For, you know, Gamers 3, Gamers 3, whatever they're calling it. I just think established companies shouldn't be sticking their toes in
and
there.
And don't back things if you're half asleep.
There is that.
We're seeing lots of companies. So I don't know if you know this, but several of the reboots or the remakes of old classic things.
Yeah.
Several of the, I didn't find this out until much later, but several of those were the companies went, hey, we want you to remake this. We want you to put it out on Kickstarter. You're going to get the funds for it. And then we're going to take all those funds. You're going to make the game. And we're going to own the game even though, you know, you're
got
supposed
the fund
yeah,
for it.
Yeah. Sort of bull crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I point the finger at Kickstarter too, because they have a vetting system and they obviously just don't care. They obviously are just like, well, we want 5% of that $6 million.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. And it's really starting to annoy me, and to the point of I don't even want to look at Kickstarter ever again.
I don't look at it very often.
I don't like the fact that they're planning on raising...
Greater Than Games?
Greater Than Games, here we go.
Being the...
A most august announcement. Greater Than Games is proud to officially announce a brand new game, Sentinel Tactics. Sentinel Tactics is a tactical combat game that uses a hex grid map to represent terrain.
Sweet.
Each player controls one... or more heroes or villains, each of which has unique powers. Combat is based on the rolling of six-sided dice. Whereas Sentinels of the Multiverse is a fully cooperative game, Sentinel Tactics is a team-based game. Groups of players will cooperate either against either a villain player or against another team of players. So while the game is competitive, cooperation and teamwork are still vital to the gameplay. The gameplay engine for Sentinel Tactics is based on the TAC Dice system developed by Living World Games. We have been working with these fine folks since last year, and when they came to us with their heroic idea, we were thrilled to jointly present this collaborative work. The primary designers of Sentinel Tactics are Luther Hendricks, Kevin Nunn, and Christopher Bedell. Now we know that there is a lot of interest in miniatures, but we also want to keep the cost of the base game as affordable as possible. Thus, the game will come with tokens to represent each of the heroes and villains.
Very nice.
There will also be a miniatures pack sold separately for people interested in adding miniatures to the game in place of the tokens.
Sweet.
Or for people who are interested in the miniatures of their favorite Sentinels of the Multiverse. Sentinel Tactics takes place a few years after the primary storyline of Sentinel of the Multiverse, so you will see changes in the look and experience of the heroes and villains you already know. There will be more information about how the multiverse has changed as we get closer to the launch of the game. And then this coming week at Gen Con, we will be hosting a preview games of Sentinel Tactics in the Greater Than Games booth. So definitely come by and check it out. Granted, it's still mostly a bare bones prototype, but you'll get a very solid feel for the gameplay, which is a blast. Look forward to a Kickstarter next year, which will give more information about the game itself, the release date, and the changes it brings to the multiverse. And remember, keep on saving the multiverse. So that is definitely on my radar for things that I know. There's a certain level of I'm fed up with Kickstarter,
especially with some of what we've got planned for CanCon next year. That makes me very excited.
So, but
that's excellent.
It's
yeah.
Ooh, that's actually a really good idea. I know exactly what you're thinking. But honestly, we love Greater Than Games. We love their stuff.
Great guys.
And I saw this come down my feed the other day. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be awesome.
Where did they post it to?
You know what's really funny? It's in the Greater Than Games. It's in his blog. I don't remember if I got an email that I deleted or something because it's not.
Because I never got
it. It's not through the Kickstarter. I got this. I don't remember where I saw it. Oh, maybe I saw this on the Greater Than Games Facebook. That may have been where I saw it.
See, that's the one problem with the internet. Sometimes there's just too much. I can't keep
everything
up with it all. I'm just like,
oh, I didn't see that. I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a bunch of cool stuff that's come down our way recently. As you know, I was waiting fairly impatiently for a nice big old package to arrive, which finally got here.
Now, good thing it showed up here and not at our house.
Well,
because with me working now, we got a package from where? We got your latest copy of Game Informer.
How do you have a copy of Game Informer? I got my latest copy of Game Informer.
It's labeled the Noah Gibbs.
Oh, that's so funny.
I read it this morning because we rented Dragon's Crown last night, and I got up this morning. I got home really, really late last night.
And you wanted to see the...
And I wanted to play it, so I popped it in, and it's like downloading a patch. Patch already? The game just came out. And
they
then
patch them day one.
Well, no. It's even better than that. Patch loads, says Capcom. What? Capcom? It's not done by Capcom, it's done by Atlas. Dragon's Dogma. What?
Really? Wrong game.
I sent a text to Becca. I was like, you grabbed the wrong game. I went and looked at the box. No, the box says Dragon's Crown. Dumbass at the game store is like, it looks close enough.
I've actually heard good things about Dragon's Dogma.
It's terrible.
Is it?
It's crap.
Okay, then.
This is one of those games that makes you want to kick Capcom right in the balls.
Moving on, then.
Lots of balls.
Like Cloudberry Kingdom.
Have any of you seen... this may have just been on my radar. Have you guys seen the little indie game called Papers, Please?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I have. That is a crazy game.
It's messed
game
up.
Game of diplomacy and intrigue.
So what it is you're playing a border customs agent. And people come up to your desk and you have to either, based on, you're given rules every day of who you're allowed to let in. So on like the first day, it's only citizens of Erostotska, which is the, you know, USSR fake country they give you. Only the citizens of the country are allowed in. So you say, papers, please. They hand you their thing. You have to look at it. It says, does it say, you know, are they from the country? Okay, yes. Stamp, they're in. Oops, sorry. And then on day two, it's like, okay, we're opening it to these members, but they only from these countries. So you have to check the countries. And it gets harder as it goes on because it's like, okay, is it a fake passport? You have to make sure that... And you have resources that you can pull up really quickly and see how well you do. And, you know, are they supposed to... You know, is it issued in, like, the right city on some of them to make sure... So it gets really involved, and there's this whole plot line that starts happening, and different things happen if you let or don't let certain people in. Like, there's a guy who murders a bunch of people in another country and is fleeing to your country for amnesty. Well, you have the option of either just, if you pay attention, you have the option of, like, letting him in and he just gets into the country, or you have the option of hitting the button, shutting the whole thing down around him, and they come and arrest him. And it's really,
what is this?
It's called Papers, Please. It's
very, very interesting.
It's like old 8-bit, like, Nintendo-style graphics.
Uh-huh.
And it's very interesting. You have to, but the whole part of the whole thing is you have to get so many people through your gate every day because they pay you your wages based on
the number of people you actually
get through every day
or decline.
So you, and your family, you know, if you don't make enough money to pay for food or heat, then you know
your family starts to go
hungry. Your family starts to get cold. It's a very interesting look at like 1980s USSR style things. It's a really interesting. I found it originally through watching a YouTube video by the Ogscast. They were doing they were playing the demo of it, and it was very, very interesting. I mean, it was.
The new indie game, the one that you play like a thief that breaks into buildings and you can like hijack the electricity and stuff to make it do different things. It's 8-bit. It's funny. The video for it's like infiltrate the building, eliminate the competition, which is like the guards. And he like jumps to the roof and like starts beating a guy, like knocks the guy down. The guy's like, and it's like use as little force as necessary. It's like, yeah, that's me. It's not out yet.
I had played the demo of, or the original version, the beta version of Papers, Please when it had first came out, and it's finally released. And it's $10 on a bunch of different sites.
And Gunpoint. It's Gunpoint.
Gunpoint.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Yeah. Oh, I have heard of that. And it's just one of those little indie games that like. Is really something a little different because there's a story to it, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like you have to pay attention. And let me tell you, it's a very intense game. You get very invested in it.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
In the small village of Dundreville, three brothers are spurred into action when an ogre decides to raid the village, burn down the blacksmith shop, and claim two of the citizens. The Link brothers, rather than see their fair village taken advantage of, decided to head out to do some justice. However, upon returning triumphant, they find their village has been attacked and the majority of the folk has been kidnapped and possibly bound for slavery. The first step into the long, hard road that is adventuring is a dangerous one. But will the brothers become legends? Or wind up dead, unarmored, in a ditch. Pathfinder Brothers.
The Rant.
Now, Nathan, you were just talking about some video game?
Yeah, I rented a game that's actually been, it's been highly controversial, and I was curious because I'd looked at some of the actual gameplay, and the gameplay looked interesting, and the game itself, when it's reviewed by male reviewers, gets good scores, and when it's reviewed by female scorers, it gets bad scores. And people are like, oh, it's just because you don't like the artwork. Well, that's the reason why it's controversial, and I've played it. We rented it last night. I started playing it today, and I can understand why it's controversial. I don't like the artwork for the characters, and I think it's hypersexualized, and there's no excuse for it.
Many years ago, we discussed a game company that I don't think is around anymore called Avalanche Press.
Yes.
And their choice of book covers, softcore porn book covers. Yeah, you know, scantily clad women paintings of scantily clad women spread eagle on the covers, and I think I said it then. You know, I'll say it again here. It's this kind of an image doesn't help.
It doesn't help the
gaming community at all.
No, because it paints
You're a video gamer or a tabletop gamer or both.
Well, the game, of course, that I'm talking about, the game that's a big piece of controversy right now, is, of course, Dragon's Crown. And it's really sad because I did rent it. I enjoy the gameplay. I liken the gameplay to how someone else commented, and after I played it, I agree with them, as it's like playing the old Dungeons & Dragons arcade game. Mm-hmm. It really is. You have EXP, you go on adventures, you finish quests, and you have, you know, some
So options. Is it like the arcade game one, or like we're talking old school?
Arcade game one. Okay, like the 2D side-scrolling.
So sort of, for people who don't know, I mean, sort of like Golden Axe type of.
Yes, only with actual RPG elements.
Sure. But it's that same style. Yeah.
Shadows of Mistara and Tower of Doom.
I know Shadows of Mistara was the original one.
Yes, and then Tower of Doom was the follow-up. Both of those were fantastic games. It was all hand-drawn and... sprites, and this game's the same way. All the artwork in it appears appears to be hand-drawn, probably manipulated with Photoshop or whatnot, but the problem is that they depict female characters in a grotesquely disproportionate way. They do the same thing with some of the male characters, but the thing is the male characters are done in a way to emphasize their strength, whereas the female characters, it's done for nothing other than to hypersexualize them. That's mm-hmm. the only thing I think of. There's no reason for a character to have massive breasts that when they run, like, smack them in the face, and one of their breasts is three times the size of their head. And you know, and then you've got
I can see where that would be a problem in combat.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I understand she casts spells, well, but she's still got to run.
There are probably some people out there that are looking at us, going, "Oh, you guys are being prudes." But guys, take a step back and look at this. This is just ridiculous.
It is. Okay? It looks bad.
Oh, okay, we live in the age of the internet. If you want to go see
breasts,
tits, you can go see tits, okay? Yeah. You can go find boobs to look at.
It's not like
online.
In the 80s when you had to steal something from your brother's Playboy stash or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, but this artwork, it's just horrible.
The Amazon,
it's just gross.
Nathan showed it to us, and the one we're really annoyed with is it the Amazon?
Yeah, the Amazon is just gross.
What it reminds me of is way back in the day, late 80s, early 90s, there was underground, basically... And we had them at the video store. It was underground CD-ROM games from Japan that were essentially hentai games, but they weren't like full motion stuff. It was just pictures.
Yeah.
And it's they images like games. That really showed up in it.
Yeah.
And it's just like this is like a step backward. I mean, can't we do something? There are more women in gaming now than there have been in years.
Yeah, the numbers are starting to show that it's rapidly approaching a 50-50 parity, that 50% of the gaming community is now women. And the thing is that there are a lot of female gamers now that are not casual gamers. They play stuff like this and they're not happy, and mm-hmm. there are a lot of males that aren't happy. But the thing is you have this other group of males that have this—I can't think of anything other than this idea that they are entitled to whatever they want, no matter who it hurts or how bad it makes everything appear.
Yeah.
Who are like threatening and death, and like sending death threats to these people who don't like the game because of the art
style.
Now,
with Palladium fans, that's understandable, well, but this isn't Palladium.
This isn't Palladium, but it shows you how you know. This that their responses is exactly why people
and I,
do not
and I
take.
Would even dare say that Palladium is better than this because their books at least will soak up caffeine.
Soak up caffeine.
This is digital; it soaks up no caffeine.
Yeah, and on top of that, you know, Keith Parkinson actually was a pretty good artist.
And it seems like just based on, I mean, I will have my brother in here at some point to talk video games. I know he's interested in coming in and talking. We're gonna have extra people coming in now and again and talking various things, but. He'll tell a story about when he used to work for Electronic Arts and he worked on Madden 2000.
And there's
if you ever watch, I know we're all huge Madden people, but I'm sure some people out there play it. That's great. He was working on it. He was on the programmer side, but there's an intro video in the game where when you're playing the game, it's like football players, and then it's cheerleaders' boobs. And it pans across these cheerleaders, and it pans across their chests. And Eric told me about this, and it was originally just the cheerleaders doing that. But they
couldn't get the license.
They basically said, "Well, we don't want to pay the cheerleaders for their likeness." And so they're like, "Okay, well, we could change their faces. I mean, that's not a big deal." They said, "No, just zoom in on their chest." This was the mandate from above.
Yeah,
and it was just like it's that mentality that is still in there that. Drives a game like this, and it strikes me, as you said, it's the gameplay isn't bad, right?
No, the gameplay is fantastic.
So the gameplay is fine. It's the people who come in and say the artwork. Well, in order to sell this better, we're gonna put
the artwork,
ridiculous tits and ass in it.
Yeah, the artwork is clearly pandering to a very teenage crowd. The fact is teens have bad
to 12-year-old boys.
Yeah, 12 or 13-year-old boys. And the thing is what makes it even worse is. You know, all the characters are stupid stylized, grotesque. I call it grotesquely proportioned because they're not natural proportions. If anybody had proportions like that, like especially the sorceress with her breasts that are so large that she can smack herself in the face with them when she runs, if her breasts were that large, her back would be so bad she wouldn't be able to walk straight.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, what makes it worse is they've got two characters in the game that are playable characters that are not proportioned terribly. You have an elf. Right. Who's
and we all
archer.
Know that there are only two people in this world who have tits that big. Me and Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, but there's an elf, and then there's the wizard. The wizard is a male that's accurately proportioned. You look at the dwarf, and his legs are like 35 pixels, and his upper body's like 190 tall by 400 wide. He looks like a
If I wanted to play as
brick.
A triangle.
Yeah, yeah. And the warrior, the warrior, I can understand some of the disproportion because he's wearing like massive plate mail armor. But still, his upper body is huge and his legs are these itty-bitty little sticks. And I'm looking at it going, no, even in plate mail armor, even if that's stylized plate mail armor, if he tried to walk like that, he'd just fall over and he wouldn't be able to get back up. The weight of the armor would crush him to death.
He'd just roll back and forth.
Yeah, like a turtle.
And even if you were going to go with, okay, exaggerated breast and
I understand having exaggerated breasts and exaggerated ass.
It's what sells. I mean,
but fine. But this isn't even that. It's just gross.
I mean, there's.
It's not even good. It's just
trying to
gross.
Think of it. Let's see. There's normal video game. I mean, there's Tomb Raider. Okay,
yeah.
And I know Tomb Raider has sort of scaled it back, and they're a bit more.
Right.
Yeah. The new Tomb Raider is very realistic
and
layout.
And that's great. Fantastic. They've made a step in the right direction. I'm happy for them. Then the next step beyond that, let's say, is the Dead or Alive games, where it's boobs.
And then,
but
then
this
next...
is worse.
Yeah.
This they've taken it that much one step beyond it, and they haven't done it in a way it's like, oh, well, we're making fun of ourselves. No, they're dead serious.
Yeah. I would put this on the level of the pandering for sex sells on the same level as the Dead or Alive volleyball games.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how even this counts as sex sells, because it, to me, is just gross.
Well,
it is really
is,
grotesque.
To those of us, like, my major problem is I understand the big tits, the big ass. I
mm-hmm.
understand that. That sells. That sex sells. But the problem is what I have is there is a proportion to it. You look at women that are larger breasted or have larger posteriors. Their proportions match that.
Our listeners look going, I gotta play this game.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is
they're
this isn't even...
Hopefully we have awesome...
This isn't even good.
Yeah. But the rest
art.
Of their bodies are proportionate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is these characters are disproportionate. They have parts of their bodies, the aspects of their bodies, and in some cases like half of their body, is completely disproportionate to the rest of the body and in ways that would not... Like actual anatomically would not work.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work. The body would not be able to handle that. And I have problems with that. I mean, I'm not a big artist. I never got really very good at art, but
mm-hmm.
I took lots of classes and I took anatomy and I know how this stuff, how the basics of how anatomy works, how the muscles attach and stuff. And this stuff doesn't work. It's like the warrior. Everyone's like, oh, well, he's like Conan. I'm like, no, he's not. His legs are thinner than mine. If you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger and any of the Conan artwork, yeah, he's got a big, huge, muscular upper body. But guess what? So are his legs. They're proportionate. You can't have this massively huge upper body and chicken legs because you're not going to be able to hold yourself up.
Not every fighter out there is a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there's a difference between being fit and being a bodybuilder. I mean,
well,
having the bodybuilding physique because you're trying to build all that muscle.
You
want to
know something
you're
interesting?
You're not doing it to go fight.
You want to know something interesting? Some of the best sword fighters I know with
mm-hmm.
what you would classify as medieval weapons, like longswords and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
look pretty much like me.
Yeah.
I mean, fairly thin,
fairly,
but they're extremely fit and extremely agile.
Evenly proportioned, type of dude.
Yeah. There's no this. They don't have this massively huge upper body that they have to use to swing the swords. People don't realize that, and this is a thing that just people don't realize, you know how much the average broadsword weighs? 3.5 pounds, and it's balanced to where you can where the tang hits the hilt,
mm-hmm.
which is where the hilt is, between the pommel and the hilt, which is actually where you hold the blade. You can balance the sword on a finger,
mm-hmm.
usually either an inch in front of or an inch behind the hilt. I mean, that's how a good designed sword was designed.
Mm-hmm.
So the weight is all balanced where you're holding it to make it easier to use. And
it's
so you don't
annoying.
Have to have these, like, you know, massive
and I know it's like,
muscles.
Oh, we're bringing realism into it, but it's just insulting, you know? And I mean, from that aspect of it's insulting to women. It is insulting to
it
women.
It is insulting to women.
But it's insulting to men, too. It's,
the
it's
worst
like,
part
okay,
of it
is that all we want?
The worst part of it is I haven't even gotten to some of the more objectionable stuff yet. The character artwork, it can be bad. But some of the static artwork for like, when there's a mission where you have to go rescue... this damsel in distress, and you get there, she's in this light white piece of clothing that you can basically almost see through, but not, you know, because they don't want to get an adults only rating, but her legs are so far spread wide you could drive it
and they won't be carried at Walmart.
Yeah, but her legs are spread so far wide that you could drive a diesel truck between them, and it's like that. There's no reason for her to be sitting like that, no reason. And it just, that's not how women set. And in the beginning video with the Amazon, she's sitting there with one leg cocked up with her legs spread like, hi, how's it going? Come on, just drive that thing right in here.
Women sit like that all the time.
Yeah.
Casually.
Oh, yeah. You know, women don't ever cross their legs or set, you know, keeping their legs together to do anything like, oh, I don't know, hide their underwear or anything like that. God forbid. And it's just, the worst part of it is that the game is fun. The game is fun. The artwork for the monsters is fantastic. The animation for the monsters is great. Some of the clips, like when you can find skeletons of people that died in the dungeons, bring them back and resurrect them. That animation for the resurrection thing is really cool. Mm-hmm. But then you have the characterizations, and then you have like the depictions. It's people have described it as misogynist. I wouldn't say it's misogynistic. I would say it's more of, it's pandering to a very specific crowd, mm-hmm. and it's denigrating. It is denigrating to people. I see it as denigrating to women, and I see it as denigrating to men, because the thing is they're basically, what they're trying to tell you is this: if you're a muscular man, this is how you're supposed to look. If you want to be a beautiful woman, your breasts have to be this big, so you better go get them augmented immediately. And the thing is in a society, as is the United States, where media dictates the way people are supposed to feel about themselves, self-esteem-wise, mm-hmm. this is not a good thing.
It's kind
of
ridiculous.
And on top of that, it really erodes the base of all these gamers trying to say, hey, you know, we as a community want to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like this comes out and people just go, that's not art, that's pornographic. And the thing is we're not prudes, not by a long shot.
Oh, God, no.
But the fact of the matter is people like us, we're pretty level when it comes to stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Looking at this going, oh my God, what the hell were they thinking? Means that the conservatives out there are having a field day with this.
It's just more ammunition.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we got all upset when, or we rightfully get upset when Fox News does a whole sex box story on Mass Effect. And which was just stupid. But then mm-hmm. it's like, a company puts this out, how do you defend against that? You go, well, not every game is like that. Unfortunately, we have them, and it just really takes away from the position we have as basically saying we are not deviant people.
No, we're not. But the thing is there are games where, you know, they know specifically what the target demographic likes, and they're going to pander to them completely, even to the detriment of the society of the community as a whole. And unfortunately, like you said, this really does. This doesn't take us back like a step. Knock us back a step. This takes us back like five. We haven't seen artwork, you know, where they try to hypersexualize every female character in it like this game in a while, unless it's like a game designed specifically as an adults-only game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see this type of artwork normally in a standard game. And I understand they're trying to make money. I understand that. But the thing is the gameplay on its own stands on its own. They could have had completely standardized characters, given them a great stylization, you know, not make their breasts bigger, but give them like a great style, the way their armor mm-hmm. looks and stuff like that, and it would have gotten the same great ratings. It would have gotten the same sort of praise, but there wouldn't have been any controversy attached to it. The problem is that, and this is the thing that really sucks, is there are a lot of people that hear this controversy and they don't just go check it out. They just go out and buy it because, oh, if it's drawing this much controversy, I got to see this controversial game.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than realizing that that's not helping. That's adding to the problem. That's abetting the issue. But
it's frustrating.
It's just, yeah, it sucks because, like I said, the game is fun, and you know it's bad when Gearbox, who is not known for you know mm-hmm. treating female characters as anything other than sex objects, steps in and goes and says something like this. The artist is Shaylin Ham. It's a female artist. She said this: I want to see more women getting interested in games and game development, but stuff like this only serves to further cement the idea that you're stepping into a male hobby rather than something that is more inclusive. Also, the first time this is the first time I've seen that character, and holy smurf, that's actually something that made its way into a basically finished video game. Smurfin' lol. Some juvenile delinquent kid in my 5th grade class used to draw girls that looked like that, only without the creepy blank featureless same faces and wizard hats, and I think he was actually better at it. I also think he's in jail now. This is ridiculously amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say? I mean, I've seen other artwork from the artist that put out the stuff. His name's George Kamatani. And his artwork is he's very capable artist. I don't understand why they felt it was such a great idea to go with this hyper stylized, grotesquely proportioned art style, because it doesn't make any sense. I can understand they're trying to, like, see, look how strong and muscular he is. Yeah, but that just makes you go, that doesn't work. He's going to fall over, and when he falls over, he's not going to be able to get back up. He's got no leg strength. You know, there's too much wrong with the proportions. And the sad thing is as fun as the game is, the artwork for the characters is so bad, and that's what you see consistently as you play the game. It's so bad, it sucks the fun out of the game for me.
Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, in video games, the visual aesthetic has to be consistent for people. I mean, a game can have great gameplay and have terrible graphics, and a lot of people just say, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the other way around. The game can be fantastically visually and have decent gameplay, and people go, it's okay. But if you can balance those two, because there is games are still very visually oriented. Mm-hmm. If you can balance those both and do good in both, the game receives a higher praise. And the thing is that I think they could have done a better job with the art. They could have grounded it a little bit more. And everybody's going to go, oh God, reality. But face it. When you see the artwork and you play the game and you watch as your character's moving on the screen, the back part of your brain the entire time is telling you there's something wrong with what I'm seeing on the screen. It doesn't work. And it just
takes you out of it.
It takes you completely out of the game, which really sucks because, like I said, the gameplay itself was fun. This is the kind of stuff I always liked because it was like the D&D arcade game. And I loved that game. I used to play that all the time when they had it at Planet Pinball.
But you want something that...
awesome.
Yeah.
You want something that doesn't look like crap.
No, I don't want it to look like... I don't want it to look like, and if I blew a hard breath, the fighter that he'd fall over and his armor would crush him to death.
But when we say crap, we don't even mean crap as in... We're fine with pixelated stuff. We're fine with... I mean, mm-hmm. We just don't want horrible whatever that is.
There were better ways they could have stylized the characters to bring out the personalities that they want to.
Yeah.
And also on top of that... It's obvious that they are doing what's called fan service, because when the Amazon walks, she walks, even when she's walking to the left or the right, she walks with her ass facing the screen, always. And the sorceress, which is the big-breasted character, when she walks, her breasts have independent suspension. It's clear that they were providing fan service, but they could have done it differently. I mean, it was too much, in my opinion, and because of that. A game that I was thinking about buying if I could get past the artwork, now I can't get past the artwork. I'm not going to buy it. I just can't do it. I can't support it because it doesn't work for me. Which sucks because I love the gameplay, but the artwork just ruins it for me. And, you know, I know I'm ranting about it, but it sucks because it shouldn't have gotten to this point.
No, it shouldn't have.
But it did.
But it did.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate.
And, you know, you've got all these people in the industry that are pointing out that this is a problem, and you've got... The worst part of it is you've got people, you know, the people that are gamers that are trying... are vehemently, you know, supporting these people, and they're doing it in the exact same way that always calls, you know... showcases that gamers as a community isn't a very good community. It's very masochistic. Mm-hmm. It completely breaks the image. I mean, there are a lot of gamers out there that are very level-headed people, and the game comes out like this, and the responses you get from people just make you
You spend all your time defending, going, no, Mass Effect isn't this horrible sex game. I mean, play it. It's a good game. It's got all this great stuff in it.
And then something like this comes out, and you go,
I can't defend that. I can't. I just can't do it, because... and it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts as a gamer. And it doesn't hurt to... I mean, obviously this is a video game, but it doesn't hurt... It doesn't help tabletop games either.
No.
You know?
Nah, it doesn't.
Because people are going to go, well, you know, it's an RPG. And they're going to go, well, I wonder if the RPGs that people play at their homes are like this. I don't want my kids playing games where the characters are like this. You know, parents... I know parents, especially conservative parents out in the Midwest, are going to have a smurf fit over this. I mean, it's just... They're just going to flip out. And the game is, I looked it up, I thought the game was rated mature. The game is rated teen, which means, you know, any kid
That's
can get
horrible.
Their hands on this game.
That should not be. It just based on art, the art, yeah. I mean, it should be rated crap.
Yeah. this game should be rated S. S as in Smurf, as in should not be played by anybody. No, that's not true.
And that's sad because
that's not true. The gameplay is good gameplay. They just what they need to do is
they need to put out a
different animation pack.
Yeah, exactly. A patch that replaces all of the art.
Just a pack. All you got to do is just a pack.
Patch it all, and it'll just say, "This is the real art we meant to release."
Mm-hmm. The worst part of it is that.
But we were drinking at the time.
The worst part of it is the game was actually originally started to be released for the Sega Dreamcast. And you look at the original character, the character designs, and they're the typical Japanese character designs. You know, the little witch or sorceress. She's got a little witch broom,
yeah,
and she's wearing like a little mini skirt, but it's still. She's proportioned.
She looked fine. I thought she probably should have a little bit longer, just because it looked weird.
Yeah,
not because
her apron was longer than her skirt.
Yeah, that just looked weird. It wasn't being prudish because it just was weird.
It was an unusual design. Now that's saying it was an unusual design for us Westerners.
Right.
For Japanese artwork style, that's very common. This and Dragon's Crown is not. Common even in Japan. This is a hyper stylized form. So yeah, I draw offense from it. My friends that are women, and I may not have a ton of friends that are women, but I've got more than a dozen, and everyone I've talked to says this is inappropriate and it's denigrating to them. And when people come back and go, well, the men are hypersexualized too, every one of the women said the men were so grotesquely proportioned they wouldn't want
the men
in
just
the same
look
room.
Dumb. I mean, they just look dumb.
I mean, they're supposed to be, and I understand they're supposed to be muscle-bound oafs, but the fact of the matter is...
But they look dumb.
They don't even portray that stereotype properly because they're disproportionate. And the proportions is what really gets me. I mean, the fighter, his upper body is like half again longer than his legs.
Right.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
The average person's legs are at least the same length as their torso, or... about a quarter shorter,
mm-hmm.
but the proportions are fairly concurrent, which is not what I can say about this. But I'm going to stop ranting about it because Noah's here.
Yes, so today I am reviewing the second edition AD&D re-release special edition Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master Guide.
We managed to talk some third ed, fourth ed, fifth ed, and now we're going back to second ed.
I have to say, as much as I hate THACO and I hate some of the rules for second ed, this was my first edition. This was my first D&D.
My first
see,
D&D was actually
was so
D&D.
Easy.
I'm old.
THACO was so easy to fix, though. Anyway, but also the Monster Manual.
Monstrous Manual? Is it Monstrous?
It's Monstrous, but okay. It's a Monster Manual.
Okay, I was just curious because I knew that the revised second edition books was Monstrous Manual, but some of the early second edition AD&D Monster Manuals were called Monster Manual. So,
yeah,
I was curious.
It's a Monster Manual.
But these are the deluxe editions.
These are the deluxe editions.
By WotC.
The awesome thing is the art is both the same and different.
They couldn't get all the licensing for all of the old original.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Pass the Monstrous Manual down this way.
Because we love that stuff.
The art is pretty... In the Monstrous Manual, the art is the same. I
love
that
old artwork.
My favorite is the Invisible Stalker.
For those of you listening,
it's a blank
frame.
It's a blank art frame.
Now, I do have to point out, though, that the actual font and the coloring of the player's handbook and the DMG is actually the...
Revised.
It's the player's options and probably the later... second edition, what some people call 2.5.
Yeah, the revised second
which
edition.
Is still, which I will say is the
well,
still
the copyright
edition
on it is 89, 95, 2013, so yeah, I would guess it's probably
revised.
The 95.
This is the later
version.
This was my first edition, because I will always remember that my original player's handbook had the barbarian punching through the door. That's the image that's on the front of it.
Well, but what I'm saying is,
The inside
and the one with them riding on the
is
the horse.
Actually different.
Except you have to remember, I got into D&D in 95, so that is my first.
That's fine. That's fair fine. Enough. I'm just pointing out that this is not my second edition.
Okay, that's fine.
We had the original second edition.
I had.
Well, that's because you're older than Dirk, Jeremy.
Well, that's
right?
True. And but that's okay, because I still love this, because the just going through this, some of this art is the classic art.
The art is fantastic.
The art itself is just great. Now, some of it's goofy.
Oh, yeah.
Some of you look out here and you're like, what?
Well, I would bet they probably couldn't reprint some of the art.
Some of it they couldn't.
Yeah.
But what they picked was still fine.
Well, what's just flipping through the Monstrous Manual here, what's nice is even if they had to get new art, it's still in that old style.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like this is not...
No, that was in the original
revised book.
It must have been in... The revised.
It was in the revised,
okay.
Yeah. It's in the original revised.
See, that's part of my problem.
When these books first arrived and I flipped through them, I will say, I did not remember any art being different. I remember all of this art.
So basically,
There's two pictures that are missing.
They did find all the original art. And
no, there are two full panel plates in the middle
that
are missing.
That's still an awesome piece of art, though. All the spells are the same.
Which is awesome.
Everything is nice. I mean, this is second edition. You can pick these up, and I love the outsides.
The covers are wonderful.
Nice
embossed silvery covers. Oh, yeah.
The DMG.
The Tarrasque.
I mean, this is a DMG. This is all the charts.
All the crunchiness.
Yeah, now, I still like the artwork that's in the original ones, but I have to say, a picture like this is still sweet.
Is that a chromatic dragon?
No, that is a metal manticore.
Now, do you know if this was in the original?
I think is one of the new ones.
That's a possibility.
I don't think that is a new...
That artwork's new.
That looks a little too new and too well printed and recorded.
But the reason I'm...
You know the one I missed that's probably not in there? Is the Frozen Pegasus Halfling Thief.
The reason I'm bringing these up is because... Even if you don't play second edition, there's going to be a new edition of D&D, fifth edition, whatever they decide the name is. And one thing I've figured out is second edition and fifth edition can be converted back and forth really, really easy. So far, at least with playtest rules.
Second edition and fifth edition?
Yeah. Very easily. Now, not so sure about third edition yet. So far, they'd have feats and things. But with second edition rules, you can go back and forth. Monsters, very simple. So on. Now, if you are a collector, though, and you have the money, I would pick these up.
Just to have them.
Just to have them. Because they're nice. They are very nice.
And the binding on them is really nice.
They are beautiful.
Apparently... I'm looking through a couple of reviews on Amazon. Apparently, they corrected an animal carrying capacity chart that was wrong, but they corrected it incorrectly.
You're probably going to find weird stuff like that. And that's okay. I mean,
that was just AD&D. Second edition.
One thing about second edition is there was really no GM... ever ran a second edition game the same as the next GM.
And most GMs never ran it strict to the rules.
You would go into a game...
There were so many conflicting rules. If you
said you were running it by...
Okay, I'm running it by this.
No, it was back and forth. And that's okay. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I just love, though, how on each book, it's this diamond with the critters or the people or the monsters looking out. Now, it's not like gold leaf or anything like that.
No, but it's
but
shiny.
It's shiny. It's nice. This is like a good Christmas and or birthday present.
It's not gold leaf like 25th anniversary Call of Cthulhu was.
Now, some of the art you're going to look at, you'll be like, that's goofy. Well, yeah, it's an old school art. Now, is it as old school as like Dungeon Crawl Classic? No.
No.
It's not.
that's still original D&D.
It's still a style of art that's fun. If you want old school magic items, they're all in here. if you just want to go back and play second edition,
and you can't get the old books,
well, look for the old books and buy those first, because these are going to be very pricey. But if you want to, if you're a collector, buy these.
You can get them on Amazon for like $33 a piece.
There you go. Buy them for $30 on Amazon.
Actually, you can get them from some Amazon sellers for $20.
But I've seen the second edition non-special ones for like $5. So,
yeah, you can find the original prints.
But keep in mind, these are the later. These would be kind of like what you might consider 2.5. They came out around the...
It's the 95. It's the black border...
Yeah,
it was the black border.
Basically, what I think of is as the options and tactics and
Tactics and options.
Yeah, basically all those books when they came out, and then they reprinted them
over and over and over.
Which was fine. There wasn't any difference between those and the original books.
Well, really, what really caused TSR serious problems was the fact they just kept releasing more and more expansion books, and they weren't selling
either way,
like they really needed
As just a collector, you should go buy these.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
You should buy these now. Go buy them now. Right now.
Go
right
now. You go now.
You go buy them now. They have all the classical stuff in there. And even if you don't run second edition, but if you don't, well, that's fine. There's clones out there, but I don't see. Second edition has a special place in my heart. Mm-hmm. First edition and second edition are about the same.
Well,
they really are.
There are some enhancements.
You basically are running the same game.
Well, remember, first edition AD&D had like certain races were classes, and
they're basically the same game.
Which caused some consternation when you go to play a game like Pool of Radiance that's based off first edition AD&D,
yeah,
and you're
you're right. They're based on the 95 editions, which is when they put out those players' options and DM's options books.
Which, when I was younger, I hated those, but as I grow older and review them again, I actually am growing to like those options books. And I have learned that...
Just as long as you can go, no.
Exactly. They're more of a book that you can go, I want to build this. Okay, I can build this. More from a GM's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different story. So anyway, these three, go out, buy them now. Buy copies for all of us and send them to us.
I mean, it still fascinates me. It still amazes me. I think it's great that we're living right now in a point where second ed books are readily available. You can go buy these. You know, these are not used. These are brand new books.
Yeah,
you can go
these
buy.
Are brand new.
They're reprinting third ed books, the 3.5 books.
Yeah,
WotC is.
And there's companies that have like Dungeon Crawl Classics, and the other one?
Not even that. I mean, so really, technically speaking, you can go buy official Dungeons and Dragons. You can go buy AD&D. You can go buy third 3.5 D&D.
You can
buy fourth ed D&D.
Yeah,
and get fifth ed. I mean, I'll sign up for their playtest and whatnot. And then just not talking the unofficial stuff, you can go get your first edition stuff.
You can
get your different stuff, the Swords
what
of Wizards.
Third edition,
and
or what second
you get
edition
Pathfinder,
would have been.
3.75, you know.
You can get, basically,
Pathfinder.
If you want to play it, you can get it. And then if you are really cheap, you can get it used. And then if you want it in PDF, you can get it. And now you can get it legal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which
is because
awesome.
Putting their stuff out legally now.
They have finally
great.
Done that.
About damn time.
Which is great. That's what they should have done a long freaking time ago.
Well, it took them, 4 years
and
to do
it's
it.
Great because now you can buy all that, some of the stuff that they haven't quite re-released. Because it's great that they're releasing the core stuff. Some stuff you know they're not going to re-release.
Yeah, they're not
going to
re-release
Alcadine. But in a PDF, okay.
Yeah.
Take it down. I buy a copy. I take it down. I can print it. They're going to print it for me. I mean, they don't care. I know for myself, I bought it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, like settings like Al-Kadim or Ravenloft or any of the
right,
side
right.
settings like that, they're probably not going to reprint, but I would love to get my hands on a copy of Birthright.
Yeah,
That would be awesome to have, because that was fun. Although it took hours upon hours to do turns, it was still fantastic.
So, basically, you can play any edition you want, and it's just really nice to do that. Not to mention, it's kind of nice when you can combine some of the editions, too. And I think the Retro Clones have actually kind of expanded on that, where they got rid of things like Thaco and stuff like that.
What's the one that basically cover that's just like original?
Well, there's Osric.
Yeah,
Osric is basically Castles and Crusaders, which is another good one.
And Castles and Crusaders is the one that was what Garrett Gygax would have done for
Second
Edition.
That's actually the other one. That's AD&D, but it's Adventures Dark and Deep.
Yeah.
Which I did find out there's a monster manual. I actually own the PDF monster manual of that. I just don't have the hard copy of monster manual of that. So.
Because that book looked cool, but I just...
Of course, the Tales of Hyperborea.
Tales of Hyperborea, which is totally... its own little thing, but it's still D&D-esque. These are all D&D-esque, if you really want to come down to it.
Yeah. Then there's Hackmaster, which
there's
is basically
Hackmaster, which is D&D. They're all D&D.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get far enough back, there's different groups of AD&D.
Tunnels and Trolls, baby.
Tunnels and Trolls.
Das Schatz Aga.
Actually, I've heard some good things about Hackmaster. Like, there's certain rules in Hackmaster that are supposed to be really fun.
Yeah, I just can't ever get past it because of Knights of the Dinner Table.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, still.
You know, that was why that system was created, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
it was originally going to be a joke program.
It was, but
it's
done
so
well. Because people like it, because it's simple. They do things in it that are simple.
Yeah.
Yep.
Imagine that. Players like simplistic systems.
Though.
Oh,
that's
my God.
Awesome.
No, these are nice. These
concept.
Are really nice. I recommend them to any collector, or even if you just want to, you know, have them to play.
Well, if I had 100 bucks, I'd pick
it. Well, if you want a copy of the book that's not potentially written in or have pages torn out from a used copy, you know, it's all beaten to hell, you can get these nice, pristine, brand new ones.
They're $40 a piece.
And like I said, if you look around, I very quickly on Amazon, I found Amazon merchants that had brand new copies for $20.
Mm-hmm. I would not game with these. I would go.
But that's you.
I would
go on your shelf.
These are shelf books.
Those are shelf.
These
are
shelf books. I don't even like reading these.
Those are called SRVs.
You go down to the used bookstore. You dig through them and go. There's no page. Yeah, somebody wrote on one of these pages. Oh well, I can eat nachos with these.
Okay. I think, you know, we all see in the Neverending Story. I think Jeremy is the old guy at the bookstore. That book that the kid runs with. That's his AD&D book. He's it's like, oh yes, this is my AD&D book. I don't game with this. Oh God, no! I've got my trash copy. My game whore copies over there.
Exactly. You gotta have your game whore copies.
It's called an S.
Except Jeremy would be doing it with white gloves and tweezers.
It says SRB. It's a shelf reference book.
Yeah. Yeah, you just should not touch them.
Well, think about it. Think of my computer game collection. I've got, what, 350 computer games, and I've got 90 on display, and they sit on the shelf. I've got them all in like various compilations, and I play them off the CDs, but the boxes are all full of the disc copies, and by God, they're not getting played off the disc copies. You know, but they're there, so people know I have these games. It's the same thing. Well, it's a collector mentality.
But do you want to get, like, you know, you're eating food and get food
okay,
in there.
Fair. Or
you know,
like
or you get, like,
with the
you know,
software.
Somebody
you've
sneezes.
Or 20 years old that can eat a disc that you can't replace.
Yeah, or their sweat comes over your direction, or cooties or some crap.
Or gamer funk in the
gamer
store.
Or if air would you touch
I know! I hate that!
Those pesky molecules.
Jeez. It's annoying.
Jeremy starts gaming inside a vacuum chamber.
I wish I'm
medically sealed.
It's like, Jeremy's next game will be at the hospital.
And an iron lung.
Make your save.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Once my perfect world was gone, I knew. Everything in the nicest way.
The Rave.
So Papers, Please is interesting. And then, as I was saying earlier, there's the mess of stuff that's in front of me, which is my treasure trove haul from
you can,
Deadlands.
Like, change where the switches connect to.
From Deadlands
to
Noir.
Things, like, they turn on the light switch and like the turret shoots them.
So here it is, guys. Let me get your opinions on some of this stuff. This was the $200. I put in $200. I got the Seamus level, which is the everything they put out in print
Seamus being a term for detective.
Yeah,
actually.
Exactly.
So I got everything they put in print, I got a copy of. So I got the Bennies, I got the dice, I got the two books that they put out, the GM screen with an
adventure,
like. With it. I got five different
flip mats,
which are really, really nice. And not originally it was supposed to be five, but they decided to do six Deadlands Noir specific miniatures of the basic iconic classes for them.
Okay.
Now,
quick question on the Noir. Mm-hmm. It takes place in the...
Okay. Here's the cool thing about Noir. The core book is...
Upside down.
This is New Orleans
Knights...
Most
effective, you have to send it back.
Right. No. I keep it as a collector's item. That's what I have my Deadlands... Or my
Savage Worlds.
Yeah. I have my upside down printed Savage Worlds...
Deluxe.
Or upside down bound, at least. It's 1930. This is 1930s, early 40s, Deadlands.
Okay,
so it takes place.
Is the Civil War still going on, or
no? It progresses past the Civil War. The North and the South end up separated. There's a lot of really cool stuff. It brings
set
you
set up in the 1920s.
What?
20s and 30s.
30s. It's 30s for this, but so specifically, the Deadlands War is specifically supposed to be New Orleans 1930s. So there's that. But then there's the Noir Companion.
That's actually the main book you're writing up there.
This is the Noir
Companion. Oh, that's... Okay, I'm sorry. The Companion book is actually thicker than the other book. Okay, so this, I'm sorry, is the 1930s... Yeah, 1935...
Deadlands.
And then...
You passed me the core book. Nathan, I think you would like this.
Oh, yeah, you'll probably love this. But check this out. So what they did for the Noir Companion, Nathan, is they did four other cities, and each of the other cities is a different time period. So if you want to be Chicago set in 1927. Mm-hmm. Shan Fan, which is San Francisco, is 1939. Los Angeles, is 1946, and then the City of Gloom, which is Salt Lake City, is 1950. So there's a progression, and they deal with World War II, they deal with all this stuff. They've updated mad scientists are now called patent scientists. If you go to the hero section, they actually tell you that there was a progression of mad science to Tesla science.
Mad science from 1863 to 85. Tesla science from 1885 to 1925.
And then patent science.
So the Art Deco. Oh,
so
they use a bunch
1925
of
1925 to
45. Oh, it's great. It's all really cool Art Deco art.
Everything's made out of what's that crap called? Bakelite. Everything's made out of Bakelite.
it's interesting because
it shatters when you look at it wrong. Mm-hmm.
The some of the other stuff that they've changed for Deadlands Noir is that initially they got rid of the dice. There are no hucksters anymore. They are now called grifters. You now no longer deal with Manitou directly. You have a vice, whether it's gambling. It's specifically like a self-destructive vice, which you tap into, whether it's drinking or smoking or something, and you can like overindulge in it to do more stuff, which is pretty cool. You got the patent scientists who are Nathan, the patent scientists who like that really cool like. This is even more pulpy than Deadlands was.
That's fine. I mean, Deadlands was.
They no longer have just the plain blessed. You now specifically have Vodun priests, voodooists.
Mm-hmm.
And they had voodoo in the original Deadlands, but it's more focused on in Noir. All in all, this stuff looks great here. I mean, here, guys, check this. I'd like you guys to give your opinions on the printings and stuff. I mean, the
Printing quality is fine.
Printing quality is fine. I figured just look through. Oh, look
I
through.
Like the artwork.
The artwork is fantastic. Here's just flip through some of these, and then here's the here are the maps that they gave us. I mean, These are done by. They look almost like the game mastery mats, mm-hmm. but like they're. So you got the. You got New Orleans, two different kinds of New Orleans cemeteries. You have a New Orleans street map here. You got one that's like a.
All the patent science stuff is literally like it's Bakelite.
Yep.
Yeah.
Should be common in the 30s and 40s.
You got a mm-hmm. a like a plantation. You got a. Like the back alleys
the
here
stood out like a tom-tom.
Like warehouses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so thrilled with all this stuff. I think it's. I've been waiting for. I mean, this is the one Kickstarter.
First, this gets into Chicago because there's Al Capone.
Oh, there's Al Capone.
Yep.
Scarface.
Al Capone.
And... You just think Untouchables, but with Deadlands elements.
Oh dear lord.
Yeah.
And Al Capone's Harrow.
A nice bayou. I mean, the artwork, as always, is really, really good. I believe a lot of it's still Cheyenne Wright, who I think has always been a very good artist. I'm thrilled with it. You guys, if you're interested in buying it, it's all on Pinnacle's website. All the stuff that they produced for the Kickstarter is available for individual sale. Mm-hmm. All the miniatures, there's also here's the new...
And it's signed.
Yep, it is signed by Shane.
And Hensley.
And it's numbered also. Mm-hmm. But they also have the new action decks. Which, let me copy it for you guys.
This one's not signed. I wonder why not.
Oh, that's weird.
Maybe it's on a different page.
It was all signed in the front.
Well, okay, it could just be that they signed the main books and didn't sign the companions.
That's fine.
But here's the really nice... Oh, and these cards feel great. Here's the miniatures if you want to check those out. They're Reaper, so.
They're Reaper?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Reaper does all the Pinnacle stuff. They do Savage Worlds. They do all the Savage Worlds.
That's a nice deck of cards.
Yeah.
They look nice. I mean.
There's the cards for it.
I mean, it's very nice.
It's a great set. I'm really excited.
I would totally have participated had I been able to do so.
I do.
Yeah, that's my comment. It's like I would have
put money in, but I was broke.
You know what's funny is it's funny. I put in for this
here
the month before CantCon. No, it was the month before CantCon. 2012.
These are nice waxed cards.
Oh yeah, the cards are nice. They're waxed. It comes with two decks of them, so you can alternate decks. See. I'm really thrilled.
Have you tried breaking them yet?
Nope, haven't tried doing anything. I haven't really touched the sets yet. I wanted you guys to be here. And of course,
right now they're a little tacky because they're fresh off the press. You just need to break them.
Yeah.
But they got a nice wax on them. They're good cards.
And then there's the really fun.
I guess it's just a gloss. Is that a pet dick?
It's a New Orleans private investigator badge.
Why is there a bullet hole?
Because it's a bullet hole. It's a badge with a bullet hole.
They needed to stress the edges of the hole.
Yeah, I know.
It just looks like someone punched a hole in it. Maybe it was a laser gun from the patent.
Well, that's entirely possible. But all in all, guys, I think this is great. If you're a Deadlands fan, you're gonna love it. If you're a fan of film noir, the style of from what I've been reading of the game. The style has shifted from a much grander scale to a more individual mystery-based thing. If you really want to get a good feel for it, there is the wonderful audio dramas for it. Let me get the name of that again. Hardboiled in the Big Easy, which you can find with video, with like these cool motion capture video, or not motion capture, but like. It's almost like those motion comics with little artwork. It's called Hardboiled in the Big Easy. There's, I think, 4 or 6 episodes. It's about, maybe 45 minutes to an hour long. It's a really good listen. They got some great actors doing the voices. It's a lot of fun, and it really gives you a good feel for what Deadlands Noir is going to be like.
Nice.
And you should probably bring up the other one he's doing, which is Weird Wars Rome.
Yes, and there's currently the Kickstarter
for Weird Wars Rome.
It's now, still open.
It is still open.
Which I may have to dump a few bucks in because...
Well, if you want to do that, that's fine. That's really not my style of things. As of recording, there are 12 days to go. They've more than met their goal for this. But it's definitely kind of cool. It's very... it's almost kind of Cthulhu Invictus themed, just of course with Savage Worlds.
With Weird Brawlers, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it looks really really fun. It's Weird Wars. It's monsters and giant military stuff and legionnaires and really hydras and all kinds of crazy.
You can get the PDF for $20.
Can you? Cool. So $20 PDF version. But it looks good. I'm very happy with my Deadlands Noir haul here.
It's very cool.
It's very cool, and
it's very nice.
I'll try and take some pictures of everything and post them on the episode, on the website with this episode, I guess. So, that's my more than $0.02, $2, $5, whatever you want to say it.
It was your Seamus level.
It was my Seamus level.
Whatever you kicked.
It was one of those things where I honestly regretted doing it right after CanCon because I went, oh, if I hadn't spent that $200, I could move like now. And I was like, no, okay. And then I've been waiting.
Oh, you got moved anyway. You have Deadlands Noir.
Yeah, there you go. See, and they also have the
Deadlands specific device.
Yeah, it's the Noir dice. It's the they have you always have the wild eye, and the wild eye just has a smoking gun on the six. So,
well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's my review and rant and gleeful.
That was more of a rave than a rant.
Well, rave. My review and rave of Deadlands Noir. If you like noir settings, if you like noir settings with a little bit of supernatural to it, if you like Savage Worlds, then you're gonna love this.
And because my discussion about Dragon's Crown was a rant. That was a rave.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And the fact that they're getting flack from, all over the industry doesn't help, either.
Well,
But, you know what? Any sort of... What is it? All publicity is good publicity.
All publicity is good publicity. That's right.
But, no, it's... If you want to come over and try it, you're welcome to check it out. We also rented Peakman 3. I only played it for about 30 minutes, but I'm already in love.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
It is 2007, and just a few years after the Marotak invasion. L.A. was destroyed, turned to rubble. However, like an angel, the city rose once more, becoming the City of Angels. The streets have become packed with gang war and supervillain-on-supervillain violence following the murder of the previous superhero group, the Rebels. Will the new kids on the block, the Guardian Angels, be able to reclaim the streets, or will they die trying? Mutants and Masterminds. City of Angels.
All right, we are, like we said, we are recording on the second night, the Friday night of Gen Con, and that being, it being the Friday night of Gen Con, it is also the night that they are announcing the winners of the Ennie Awards. I want to give a special shout-out and a special congratulations to a longtime listener and longtime good friend, Tracy Barnett.
Yeah, Tracy!
Who I now have a photo of which... Of him with his Judge's Spotlight Award for School Days. I will be sure to post this in the show notes. We're really, really proud of you, Tracy. We're really happy.
Yes,
you
got
to we got to take a little credit. He did come up with it driving home from CanCon.
We got to at least put it, ride his coattails as best we can. We know that Tracy wouldn't have done this without us, and that. We know that during your speech, you must have gone up there and said things like, this game, I'm glad that the judges like this game and that they have given me this prestigious award and that I had to step on all these little people to get up there. But
It is actually the Gamers Haven podcast that I want to thank especially for the honor of allowing me to come up with this game after their convention. Yeah, so
pretty much.
We want to thank you, Tracy, for the kind words that you no doubt said to us at the Annie Awards ceremony. Mm-hmm. So,
and for those of you who are bored of the internet era, this is called sarcasm.
No, it's totally true. No, there's no sarcasm here.
There's no sarcasm here.
No.
Well,
I also want to say congratulations to Tracy because his funding for his Kickstarter for the Iron Edda book did fund.
Did it?
As far as I know.
Oh, yes, it did.
Now that
he's rich, remember who helped you with your first game, who inspired you, who gave you permission to create the game, at least subconsciously. We planted the thoughts. So
yes,
we love you, Tracy. We're really proud of you. And
way to go, buddy!
Congratulations!
Yes, congratulations!
You rock, man. You really do. So,
and I hope to see you soon.
Definitely. If we don't see you before CanCon, we'll
see you at CanCon.
We'll see you at CanCon next year.
We'd really like it if you came down before then.
You're a champ. You're awesome. Congratulations. School Days is a fine, wonderful, upstanding product. And if you don't own it, you should.
We have a copy, but I have not had a chance to play it. But I did get to play One Shot, finally. And I like One Shot. So
did you?
Yeah, I like One Shot. I got to play it once. So, Becca bought me one of those.
I wanted to take
copies.
A little bit of time out. Call this our random encounters, whatever. Congratulations, Tracy. We love you, man. So.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
One shots, different games, one shot at a time.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.